You must be excited.
Yes, we are.
An audio engineer knows which gear there is.
You need to run your source through the DNS 1500 first.
This always did feel like one of those shows that would go for a while.
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Golf Channel on NBC and the International Federation of PGA Tours are proud to present a World Golf Championship.
Jason Day has the big stick out again.
A little harder and faster than it was this morning.
But it is still a very, very difficult up and down. You know, it's just such a simple motion, and his body is so quiet and so still.
Really a rather furry lie. It's one of the deeper ones I've seen.
Yeah, that takes all the teeth out of this hole. It's supposed to be a pretty strong hole.
Is it in?
Ooh, the wheels were shaking.
Oh, man.
You could hear
stopped
the
him in his
horsepower
tracks.
Revving up.
Roger, you would have given those,
well, they
right?
thought it was almost over.
Back in your prime.
You had one last night.
Yes, I did.
There is Jason after he putted out and stretching it out. A pretty good thing and a smart thing to do.
Spoken like a guy who's done a few of those exercises.
It's not Jason Day. It's Jason all day, all night, and then again tomorrow. Someone give that guy a swift kick in the ass. I have to tell you something. So I kind of like golf because it's convenient for a nap on Sunday. You know, it's a slow mover. So I took a nap. I got up and I cleaned up the poop in the backyard so that we could have an Easter milk bone hunt. Let me see. What else did I do? I swept the house. I was a very good boy. I took out the trash and they were still playing.
Well, that's how it goes.
It's a mental game. It went on for 8 hours with four men playing golf. So there were Day, McIlroy. I don't even know how to pronounce this game.
Rory Malk.
Rafael Cabrera Bello. So they had to fill a lot of dead air. With the final round consisted mostly of watching four guys walk around the golf course rather than play. Because this is the way Jason Day plays. Every day that he plays. It took 8 hours. So I love the tweets. Love Jason Day as a golfer, but it's getting ridiculously slow now. How does Jason Day get away with being as slow as he is?
Because he's now the number one.
The guy is incredible, but it's bad for the sport seeing, you know, that he's number one in the world.
And you know what? Jason Day is giving those people the finger because he's the number one golfer in the world now. So
Jason Day plays so slow.
You must be excited.
Yes, we are.
I'm excited for a Bubba Booey, for Christ's sake. We couldn't even get one of those out there.
Yeah,
he's
a deliberate golfer, that's for sure. I mean,
but when you have four people that are playing the game and it's the final and it's taking
eight hours. Have you not watched golf closely?
I expect to fall asleep and wake over and have
you
it.
You know
been,
what?
The crowd is
expected to remain quiet. There's etiquette on the golf
course.
There
is no etiquette anymore.
There most certainly is.
There's shenanigans and hijinks and, you know.
But, you know, the funny thing is that that's tantamount to, you know, basketball players complaining that Steph Curry celebrates too much or flipping the bat after you hit a home run. And
then those people in tennis who grunt, which makes the sporting completely unwatchable, Sharapova.
What was her name? Yeah, younger tennis player grunted and she's
gone. Too much
gone
grunting.
Now.
Yeah, I don't like the grunting. I'm grunting. Anything that wants to grunt
and
on me
is
me.
And how did that sound, Drex?
Ugh!
That actually, that is how it sounds.
That was me when this game was on. My God, make it stop. U.S. says it has unlocked iPhone without Apple's help. Thank you very much.
All right. So last week, everybody was supposed to go back into federal court and further this lawsuit. Well, this magistrate's order that Apple helped the FBI crack this iPhone that was used by one of the San Bernardino terrorist attackers. Well, before the hearing, actually the day before the hearing, the FBI says, wait, can we cancel this?
I know, right?
Can we postpone it, actually? We think that we found a way to crack this iPhone, and everyone pointed their fingers to this tech security company that specializes in hacking mobile devices based in Israel. Well, here we are, 4-5 days later, they've hacked the iPhone.
Yes, they have.
They have hacked the iPhone, but I love Apple's response.
Yes. The development also creates potential for new conflicts between the government and Apple. Lawyers for Apple have previously said that the company would want to know what method was used to crack this device open.
Wait.
The government may make that method classified.
Wow. After all of their refusal, you know, making this a public fight. I mean, you know, it's easy to understand why Apple wouldn't have done it, but, you know, there was a lot of grandstanding there, and now they want the federal government to turn over their methods for hacking the iPhone?
Well, I mean, you know, it's the Pandora's box now that the government is saying they didn't do it, that they had a third party do it, which I'm not sure I believe. I think they would have been better off just saying, like, the NSA figured it out. Why'd they have to mention the third party? But they did.
Well, they didn't.
Well, they did. They said a third party opened it up.
Right. And
okay. So now.
And we suspect third party in Israel.
Right, so should we suspect that the bad guys will get their hands on that third party? Your local yokel sheriff's department, the KGB,
ISIS.
James Bond, ISIS, yes. Scotland Yard.
I mean, what did you think about that fight?
The Oakland Police Department.
I thought the whole conversation was kind of ridiculous. I mean, of course there was somebody out there that was going to hack that thing. And this stuff is constantly evolving. Encryption is constantly evolving because people are constantly finding ways to hack it.
Well, I said this a long time ago. So here's the way you fix this, Apple. You come up with a new encryption system. And then you say the iPhone 6 is polluted now that the government's got their fingers into it. And then you give us the iPhone 7.
If Steve Jobs were in charge, that announcement would be made next week.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that's the way you go about that. All right. Let me see here. We've got a lot of fun things to talk about. Which one do you want to do next? The law grad loses suit against school after not finding a job in 10 years. So this law graduate who came to the top of her class has lost a lawsuit against her former school after taking it to court over her failure to find a job in the legal field in almost a decade. She's a 37-year-old graduate from Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego with flying colors nearly 10 years ago, but has not been able to score a full-time gig practicing law. So she sued the school for $125,000 in damages, claiming that she was lured into paying tuition by inflated employment stats. And it was dismissed yesterday. It says yesterday. How's that possible? They don't do that on Sundays. This must be Friday's news. Okay. Law graduate Anna has lost her lawsuit against the former school after taking it to court and over her failure to find a job in almost a decade. The lawsuit was dismissed. And after she graduated, she went on to pass the state bar exam and set out to use that law degree. That cost her about $150,000, according to the New York Times. She was offered a gig after she graduated with a law firm that was willing to give her $60,000, but she turned that down. And
in San Diego, you can't live on $60,000.
I understand, yeah.
And pay loans?
She, the former law student said she received only one job offer, which was less favorable than the non-law-related jobs that were available even after she sent her resume to more than 150 law firms. Well, the bad thing now is, I mean, you know, and I know that some of these schools take advantage. They fudge these numbers. I'm not saying these people did, but, you know, they... Oh, well, 90% of our graduates get gigs.
Well, you know,
some of those schools. I'm not
the for-profit colleges, the Corinthian colleges, the DeVries, the University of Phoenix, the Academy of Arts, all of those schools have been under scrutiny. And a number of them, you know, and there are many of them, have been bumped from the system that allows them to receive Cal Grant money. And last week, Corinthian Colleges was fined nearly $1.2 billion for promising jobs and placement that never materialized. In fact, I just happened to have a conversation with a woman today who went to one of these colleges, got herself $30,000 in debt, and she was going to train to be a personal trainer with some massage therapy certification. She said, the only jobs I could get were under $30,000, and they were telling me I was going to make $60,000, $80,000, $90,000. And that's the kind of thing that happened over and over and over again. of course, when you have the Attorney General and the state of California and really the federal government behind this thing, you know, courts tend to pay a little bit more attention. But that's interesting development, and I doubt it will be the last time that happens.
Unfortunately for this young lady, now that she sued her school for not getting her law grad and a gig, she probably won't get a law gig now.
Unless somebody's really impressed with her.
She lost.
I understand she lost, but, right, you know.
And if she would have won.
Well, you could say that it takes some intestinal fortitude or stupidity to pursue
that.
Wish
her the best of luck.
Or both, but yeah.
All right.
You haven't heard the end of that one.
Let's take a break. When we come back with John Lobertini, we're going to talk about the madness that was going on over, Easter holiday. Of course, people didn't behave themselves. What year do we expect them to? And more on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 18. I'm 18 on 810. It's Daddy's Dyslexic Monday. Oh, what are you going to do? I'm pissed off at my neighbors who had Friday and Monday off. Oh, Drex, you're going to work again today. Well, we don't all have your, you know, sweet potato vacation plan at our office. Good God.
Well, we had Good Friday off, and we have Easter Monday off, too.
Well, how much do you have off? It's called Saturday and Sunday. Goodbye. All right. Now, this is great. Some more. Didn't you enjoy? Oh, actually, there wasn't much to enjoy over the weekend. Trump lay low. He laid low after all of that National Enquirer garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was brilliant because, you know, here comes Ted Cruz, guns a-blazing. And spoke right up about that National Enquirer story going after Donald. And then it turns out that it's probably Marco Rubio's allies.
Now, well, thought, you know, that's
dumb fool. Now, not only do you have it wrong and you responded immediately, which makes you look super guilty, but you got it wrong and you lied about Donald Trump and he'll probably sue you.
Well, you know, that's the oldest trick in the book. Drop some controversy late on a Friday or early on a Friday afternoon along a holiday
weekend.
But he
responded. He bit.
But I'm talking about Trump had reason to vanish. He had an excuse. So it was the Easter weekend.
And guess what? He had Good Friday and took Good Monday off.
It was, you know, again, he continues to hit all the right keys.
And this is fun, but Don Lemon on CNN had Omarosa. Remember Omarosa from The Apprentice on his show Friday night? And he asked the question about the Donald Trump tweet about Ted Cruz's wife and vice versa. She wouldn't answer.
Omarosa, hi, Don. You first.
Hi, Don.
This Twitter war between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz this week was it's over the top, really. What's your opinion of the retweet of the Heidi Cruz and Melania Trump pictures?
Well, I don't think we should start there. We should start with the fact that a super PAC that supports
No. I want to know.
I
want to know
Donald
what your
Trump's
opinion
wife.
Is. I'm not going to let
and,
you do that.
And Don, let
I'm
me
not
going to
let
I'm
you do that.
Answer that.
Omarosa, stop.
I'm going to answer that.
Omarosa,
let me tell you,
Omarosa, stop.
Wife,
Omarosa.
He's going to
okay,
come
let's
back
stop.
For you.
Everybody, cut the mic. Everybody. We're
doing.
Not doing that. I want everyone on this panel to answer the question directly. Then I will let you.
But you can ask questions, but you can't answer them, Don.
Okay.
You can ask them, but I have to answer
okay,
them.
Okay, we'll be right
I'm
back.
Not
we'll
be
right back.
I will.
We'll be right back.
I will. I'll shut up and I'll talk.
Don Lemon in control once again
of Omarosa. But one of the stories I loved that came out before the end of the week was the Emory students traumatized over the Donald Trump chalkings. You know, with chalk, Donald Trump 16 written on the stairs, the concrete scares on the back.
And
stairs
in Emory the back is a historically black university in Atlanta.
It turns out a lot of this was silliness. It's false. Emory students traumatized over Trump chalk. Claims students at Emory University were offered emergency counseling after pro-Trump graffiti appeared overnight on campus safe places, whatever that is. I guess the sidewalks and the stairs.
That's.
And the bench backs.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. What's true, students at Emory University gathered in a protest after pro-Trump graffiti. It was just Trump 16. Appeared overnight. Administrators investigated the graffiti as appeared outside designated areas for chalk markings. Where's that? It was just chalk. Look, you know, and then some student was quoted as saying, oh, my God, I fear for my life. It's like a KKK rally. Really? Calm down.
You're in school in Atlanta, Georgia, to begin with. And no, it's not a KKK rally. Come on.
Right. Counseling was offered or demanded by anyone, any students who complained that their safe spaces were violated. Students were afraid and traumatized, not angry or protesting. That's false. The UK Daily Mail, it was reported that Emory University students were traumatized. And they needed, I don't know, where was it, the part? Oh, they needed emergency counseling and had been offered to those who felt their safe space had been violated. So it sounds like a bunch of phooey to me.
Yeah, it's hooey. That's absolutely ridiculous. But you know what? I'm not sure what those kids are being taught on college campuses anymore.
Well,
at Washington State University a year or two ago, there were professors that forbid certain types of language in their classrooms, like illegal aliens or immigrants was a word that was banned. I mean, really? What happened to free speech?
Yes, especially on college campuses. I mean, if that's the worst thing that people are doing, put Trump 2016 up, I think we're doing okay. Look,
yeah.
I'm not a fan. You know, I'm just saying, all this talk of whether they were traumatized or not, as you mentioned, much ado about nothing.
Well, you know, again, this is the war that these politicians are playing with each other, and it's interesting. Every time they try to slime this guy, it just slides right off of him. He finds the right thing to say.
Yeah, but this is about the sensitivity of college campuses.
Well, you know, whoever created this, whoever did this, and however these stories were spun, they did that to create a flashpoint for outrage towards Donald Trump. And maybe it worked, maybe it didn't.
Well,
didn't get a ton of news.
Get your chalk out and write Bernie Sanders everywhere, or Hillary. By the way, great thing over the weekend. I don't know if you got to, besides the golf game that went on all day and all night. I tuned in, I think it was Saturday night, when Bernie Sanders won Alaska, Hawaii, and Washington State by 80-20, basically, overall in three states. And then he gave this unbelievable speech from Madison, Wisconsin. And I'm coming around. I'm starting to feel the burn, I have to tell you. I really am. I listen to Pat Thurston all the time talk about Bernie, and I keep thinking, yeah, yada, yada, yada. But I listened to his speech. I don't know. He might be onto something.
You know what?
And he's the guy who can beat Donald Trump if Donald Trump should be the candidate.
You know, I love some of what he says. I mean, you know, what he says works. I like what I'm hearing.
I was blown away, actually.
But my concern is this. Is he electable? That's
well, yes, 11 points over Trump. Right now, Hillary would win 4 points over Trump. Now,
well, those numbers have changed dramatically since a week ago.
There's a lot of, yes, well, and they will until November.
And three points is a statistical dead heat.
That's right. So that's where you would put Hillary. But, Bernie versus Trump, Bernie's out in front 11%. I don't know. I'm just telling you. I very seldom watch an entire speech, but I sat there and watched the entire speech because I was sick of the golf. That was actually on Sunday. I just can't get over it still. I was impressed. It was impressive.
Jason Day steps up to the 18th green.
Oh, my God.
Bye-bye. No, you know what? Bernie Sanders.
Even they weren't. Even the Bubba Booies weren't impressed anymore. Oh, Bubba Booey.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, Sanders, you know, mathematically has a very, very slim chance, I guess.
Well, he the superdelegates could change their mind.
They could, as they did in 08 when Barack Obama surged ahead of Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
Another dynamic, I don't think the numbers are going to work out for him, but there's a hypothetical out there that if he continues to win some of these primaries, that he could create a similar dynamic to the one that's playing out in the Republican Party. And that is that Hillary Clinton wouldn't have the delegates, just like in theory Donald Trump wouldn't have the delegates. And then you'd go into the convention with a brokered convention whereby the delegates there would decide who the nominee would be.
Well, at least we know that won't turn into a riot. I guess that's the good news.
There are no guarantees.
Most likely not. All right. Thank you very much, John Libertini. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. And when we return, we're going to be talking and we'll be chatting with Marty Nemko, our career coach from MartyNemko.com. That's next on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810. Well, I have a job interview song to play. It's not going to play. I have to give the computer a damn kick. Marty Nemko is here. About the time you say hello, Marty, it'll start playing.
I will now say hello. Start playing.
Start playing. Okay, now, let me see if it works. There we go. Now, Turn My Swag On. This is the number one rap song to play before a job interview. Turn My Swag On. I don't know if that would work for you or I, but...
I think maybe a marching band who, you know, to walk into the interview room might be the answer.
Well, you would definitely stand out and you would be remembered if you came in with that on. All right. Well, good evening, Marty. So, hope you had a great holiday. And let's talk about, well, you can talk about whatever you want, but one of the things that I liked, why more money will not necessarily motivate your employees?
Yeah, the more money will generally motivate people to come to the job. People are just... they're very, you know, we keep score with money, and so yes, to attract somebody good, you very often need to pay them more money, even though you lose half of that additional income. Let's say you were making $80,000 and somebody offers you $100,000, that $20,000, half of it's lost in taxes. But the reality is that people fall for that, and so they will do that. But to keep good employees, as you know, you're probably sick of me saying these words, but one size does not fit all. Some people want to, they care a lot about autonomy. They hate teams. They vomit every time they're on a team because they've got to pick up the slackers. So they would be more motivated to stay if they're individual contributors. Others hate working by themselves and they live and breathe for the energy of the team. So being on a team. Some are cause driven and they need to be on projects that feel like they're making a difference in the world. You know, everybody's different. And so the really wise manager doesn't treat everybody the same. They try to find what is going to be motivating for that person.
Well, and sometimes there are two distinct methods to keep people who have been cultivated. That would be money and power, or both of them together, money and power. You know, and it's a funny thing when you talk about power. Not all employees, I'm sure you're not surprised, but some people may be surprised. Not every employee wants power.
Absolutely right. Some people, their mantra is work-life balance, work-life balance, work-life balance, and they would much rather have a lower salary and less responsibility in exchange for at 4:45, they're already packing up, going home, and they can go home to their, let's just say, personal life without having to worry about getting a text at 10 p.m. about some supposed important thing. Others love not just the word power. Power has a very bad connotation. But some people want influence. They want to make a big difference. People want to become CEOs. Really, you may not believe me, but it's usually not mainly about the money. It's about, and it's not about power. I'm an egomaniac monster who wants to intimidate. It's very more often about wanting to drive an organization, to make a difference, to lead people, to be a visionary. And so some people want power, and other people crave not having power because they care much more about their personal life, and they may not feel like they're that great. And so if you put them in a position of power, they'll just be ridiculed.
And I always remember the famous George Carlin quote that might ring true with a lot of people. Most people work just hard enough not to get fired and get paid just enough not to quit.
And that's good humor, but it's also what losers do. I've had the privilege of having been career coach to some of the most successful people on planet Earth, college presidents, CEOs of companies, etc., and also other high achievers, and they ridicule such people. They want to be as productive as they can be.
Absolutely.
They're not trying to do the least they can get away with. They want to do the most they can.
Well, and I always like incentive-based things, too. I mean, I find that a challenge. Who doesn't? I mean, I'm a person who loves a challenge.
Some people, the really best employees, they don't need carrots. They get up in the morning saying, how can I do the best job I can today? How can I accomplish the most? It is the more mediocre people who say, oh, good, if I make my quota, maybe I'll get my trip to Hawaii. The really great employee is motivated by a cosmic belief that what's important is being as productive as possible.
Well, sure.
Not because they're going to give you an incentive or a bonus.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, that's the creative, artful part of, for instance, what I do. I mean, you know, I come in here every day. It's not like I'm going to blow it off. I'm going to come in here and do the damnedest, best show I can. And that's what I try to do every day. So, I mean, it's meaningful work. It's what I want to do.
There's actually been studies that show that, let's say, I said, you know, if you can raise the ratings 1/10 of a point more, we're going to give you an extra $1,000. And every time we're trying to get you to change your behavior, maybe we want you to be a little smarter on the radio. And so every time you say something that we deem smart, we're going to give you an extra $5. Eventually, you know what? That's demotivating because you feel you're a puppet on a string being manipulated.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
So it really, those incentive things work in the short run, but in the long run, they don't breed what's most important, which is intrinsic motivation. If I say to you instead, if I'm your boss, and I say, Drex, you have thousands of people listening. You have a chance to change the world. You have a chance to share your life experiences to help make the lives of people better. That's going to be more motivating in the long run than saying, here's $5 for every smart word you use.
Well, and that is to do your very best every day. I mean, you know, I'm constantly being told, what are you, prepping for 10 shows? Well, probably I am. And maybe I'll only get to one of them tonight. But tomorrow night, I might get to two. You know, it's one of those things.
I remember what Ernest Hemingway used to write, 10 pages for every one page that would end up in a final manuscript, because he wanted the very best going in there. So being overprepared, you know, within limits. You know, we all need to know when too much is too much. But yes, being overprepared is generally certainly a sign of a winner. Definitely.
Okay. But back to this, why more employees, don't want to be motivated with more money. There is such thing as, and I hope you'll agree, that there is a living wage. It's very expensive here in the Bay. And for those who are not so fortunate as to be in tech or white-collar jobs, it's important that the rest of the community takes care of them.
And here is the issue. That was the word, take care of them. The evidence is not great. If let's say you owned a candy store, and you're now having to pay $15 an hour plus benefits, etc., where before you were paying that minimum of $7.25 an hour or whatever, unless your employee is really very good, you might be tempted to say, you know what, I don't need that second employee, or maybe I'll make them work part-time, and maybe I'll have them work only 20 hours. Or maybe I can automate. Maybe, you know, instead of having a bookkeeper, maybe I can use an automated system. So, unfortunately, and I've seen this, this is very much benefiting the minimum wage is expected to affect the fast food workers. Well, you know, there are now automated baristas, automated hamburger makers. They're still not quite cost effective, but if we have $15 an hour pay, companies like the fast food restaurants are going to be very tempted to replace them with a machine, because the machine's always there on time, no benefits, no wrongful termination suits, no bad moods, no stealing from the till. So on the face of it, it seems like paying everybody a living wage sounds great, but I worry whether there's going to be a lot of job loss and they'll be getting paid zero an hour. That's the downside.
For sure. Ace your next job interview by not selling yourself at all. And more with Marty Nemko in a minute. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Now more of the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810. Hey, 19.
Marty Nemko is my guest, our career coach. MartyNemko.com is his site, all things career worthy. So if you're going into a job interview thinking, I've got to prove myself, well, sometimes you're forgetting that it's not really about you, it's about the other person. Would you agree, Marty?
It's about you and the other person. It's about you, but you can't be too narcissistic about it. What you're going to want to do is think of it as a first date.
Right.
You are checking them out like they're checking you out, so it's very important for you to be asking them questions that are designed to assess a good fit. You're not going to ask them, you know, where are the coolest place to go to lunch, or can we get away with a 90-minute lunch hour, but more about assessing the fit. It's not all about you, but it's mainly about you. They're trying to check you out, but you're trying to check them out as well.
Well, I think they're looking for you to be enthusiastic and have some questions for them. The emotional contagion is good. Good moods usually spread. So if you're in one, I mean, if they ask you if you want a cup of coffee or water, take them up on it. It's a feel-good situation. I've always thought that. I mean, you know, I've always gone into interviews thinking, and it is about first impressions, Yeah, be part of the company, be part of the moment that they're in, and, you know, ask them how they're doing. They ask you how you're doing. Well, I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself? And remember, well, you're right, remember, it's not about you.
In part. Well, it's partly about you and partly about them. The most important thing, I think, for people to remember, yes, it's important to be upbeat, and that's good within limits. But, you know, if you are by nature a kind of a more reflective person, for you to somehow turn on some phony, I'm Mr. Ha-Ha, oh, I'm fantastic, you know, which I hear people do, it reeks of dishonesty. And
right.
It's been said that the job interview are two people lying to each other. The employer saying how great the workplace is and the employee saying how great he or she is. I really believe that the missing ingredient in most of job interviews is authenticity. And so I'm not asking you to say I'm totally depressed, I've just smoked a joint, but I do think that, you know, being within your natural range is good, and indeed vetting them while they're vetting you is far better advice than any phony I'm fantastic kind of stuff. And yes, it does not hurt to try to realize that, yes, this job is not the only job in the world, so you don't sound desperate. Yes, it does help to feel be in a better mood by thinking about what you are grateful for. All those are good things, but in the end, authenticity trumps everything.
And I always thought mirroring is a good thing, because especially if you're in there with two people, you can kind of mirror the room and subconsciously and psychologically get the vibe that is in the room and become part of it, and it become a progressive, productive conversation.
It is correct that if you mirror somebody's body language, if they tend to cross their legs and you cross the legs, and if they speak quicker, you speak quicker, it tends to engender more trust or whatever. But I do think that flies in the face of the authenticity issue. I think that in general, if you are focusing so much on the stupid mirroring, you're not focusing on what matters. What matters is you're telling stories that reveal truly you at your best. Telling those stories in a short, clear, and vaguely entertaining way is infinitely more important than whether you're crossing your legs to match that person. We only have a certain amount of brain space. And if we're devoting our space to looking and sounding and acting like the interviewer, we're not spending that's brain space that could otherwise have been devoted toward really giving smart, solid answers and asking smart, solid questions, not just at the end of the interview, but in a first date, after they say something, asking a follow-up question that you're curious about. Curiosity is something that they do value.
Oh,
and
for
making
sure.
It a real conversation. Not, I wouldn't focus so much about the techniques of, you know, appearing to match them or to be fantastic. You know, I know there are articles that say that crap, but I'm on this radio to try to hopefully give the KGO listeners a more legitimate way to succeed.
Well, and perhaps the case is, depending upon if it's a career type of job, they've probably already vetted you somewhat, at least a little bit, and they probably have looked into your history and know a little bit about you. So I agree with Marty. I mean, you come in there and be yourself. I mean, obviously be upbeat, be well-dressed, be well-groomed, but do your thing. Be yourself.
Be your best self. We all can be sadder selves or more bitter selves or whatever. I'm not asking you to be that, but we all have a range in which how we function. I want you to be your best self. And in terms of dressing, you know, I have seen nothing is more pathetic than going into a workplace where everybody comes to work expecting in T-shirts or collared shirts, and they're coming in their three-piece suit. That makes you look like a buffoon and that you're completely out of touch with the corporate culture. So well-dressed is all, everything has to be modulated. If I am a programmer in Silicon Valley, and I know that everybody wears a T-shirt when they're programming in Silicon Valley,
right.
I might wear a collared shirt, but I sure as hell am not going to wear a suit. It's going to just make it clear that, oh, I'm putting on my dog and pony show for the interviewers.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
It's like if a salesman comes in with the alligator shoes and the alligator attaché case, and they're in the Armani suit, you know they've got their hands in your wallet. You know, it's about moderation in terms of looks. You know, I remember reading a stupid article that was sent to me before the show. You know, wear orange sneakers when you're networking.
Oh, I saw that. That's ridiculous.
It's going to make, or this super bright scarf, it's going to make you seem like you're all show and not go. Focus on the substance, not on the silliness.
Right. I mean, if I were to go to a job, I'd wear nice dress jeans. I might. I would wear appropriate shoes, and I would have a blazer. But I would definitely not be wearing a tie.
Right.
Because it's not me.
But if you're a lawyer or a banker,
well,
yes, you would wear a tie.
Absolutely. For sure.
And it depends also on the level of job. You know, if at KGO, I think that in the sales force, the salespeople, for whatever reason, I think they wear jackets and ties.
For sure.
For whatever
reason,
to impress the client or whatever.
Yes.
So, you know, even within the same organization, KGO, if you're going in the sales, you're probably going to wear a sport jacket and a tie. If you're going to be the janitor, just come in with a collared shirt, you're fine.
I agree 100%. Yeah. And be your best. And
what do you wear when you come to when you're right now? Don't tell me you're naked.
I will tell you I have a blue polo shirt on, and I have dress jeans and dress sneakers.
And I think when you're employed, that shows that you're, you know, I have seen talk show hosts, they wear dirty T-shirts or whatever that have stains on them, and their hair is wild and whatever. Even when you're employed, that makes it look like you're not taking your job seriously. I'm sorry, I'm not saying you wear a jacket and tie when you come to be on a radio.
No, but I think you're right. It's important. So I'm not going to wear my Wranglers, and I am wearing dress jeans. I'm wearing clean, fresh, brand new sneakers, and not brand new, but several weeks old. And my polo shirts, you know, you put them in rotation and you take them to the dry cleaner so they're perfectly pressed and you look fine when you walk in.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing. Yes, blend in, look like the business, look like you belong.
Yep. Yeah. And again, in the interview, I want to say that the most important thing you can do as an interviewee and as an interviewer is the following. You really want, you know, everybody is distrusting the interview. They think you're BSing, you've been coached or whatever. The best thing you can do to convey your legitimate skills in preparing for the interview is to think of what three accomplishments have you made in the course of your previous work life that would impress that employer, and tell a story of something you did, a problem you faced, how you approached it, and the positive result, all in 60 seconds or less. And if you're the interviewer, probe people. Ask about their accomplishments. Ask follow-up questions to see how dogged were they, how smart were they. They can come in with a canned answer, but if you're asking follow-up probing questions, that's going to really help you ascertain how smart, how driven, how low motivation, how low maintenance, how creative the person is. The best thing that an interviewer can do is probe those accomplishments.
Fantastic, as always. Marty Nemko from MartyNemko.com. He is a career coach. He's our career coach, and we'll talk to him again next Monday. Marty, have a great week.
You too.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back. We'll begin the late night, late show wrap-up on the Drex Radio Show. Lots of good stuff on the way on KGO 810.